Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law. Go Zags!
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that travels the world every chance it gets, both in real and virtual time. Two international films are on this week's docket, taking us first to Denmark, the setting of Oscar nominee Thomas Vinterberg's film Another Round. Then we'll head to Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is where the film Quo Vadis Ida takes place. Finally, Nathan, in his guise as the movie editor for The Inlander, will give us a roundup of the films he's been watching, courtesy of the 2021 virtual South by Southwest Film Festival. Let's begin this week's show by heading to Copenhagen. It's important to point out that the original title for Thomas Vinterberg's film Another Round is Druk, which translates as binge drinking. And that's relevant because it is the film's main theme. To be specific, Another Round, which was co-written by Vinterberg and Tobias Lindholm, is a study of four men who decide that life goes better with alcohol. Mads Mikkelsen plays one of the four, all old friends who embark on what they claim is a scientific study, but ends up being simply a means of spicing up their respective ho-hum existences. It's difficult to pin down just exactly what is the point that Vinterberg and Lindholm are trying to make, other than too much of anything can be bad for you, that humans have an amazing capacity for rationalization, or even the simple fact that young Danes like to party. But Vinterberg, who along with fellow Dane Lars von Trier was one of the founders of the Dogma 95 movement, clearly has a talent for keeping us interested in a story, even when that story involves people making one bad decision after the next.
Yeah, this movie would turn just about anyone sober, I think. I mean, the sheer amount of alcohol that is consumed in Another Round is enough to just, I mean, make your stomach churn, really. Like, I mean, these guys are partying late into the night and then just getting up in the morning and going to work and then drinking while they're working. And after a while, you start to wonder, like, is this even a believable depiction of how this would go down? Like, would the house of cards start to tumble earlier? But I think what makes this movie work is that I think what it's really about is it's about sort of mental justifications or moral justifications, this idea that these guys are doing this behavior that's self-destructive on a number of levels, not just to their health, but to their personal lives and their careers. The idea that they're working as teachers and they could get found out at any moment that, you know, they're sneaking booze in the back of the classroom while the kids are in the room. And yet they've come up with this, they're kind of doing mental gymnastics to justify this entire thing. They're saying, well, but this is a social experiment. You know, after this is over, we're going to have, you know, accomplished something. We're going to be smarter in some ways about how the human body works and how the brain works, because the idea behind this study, quote unquote study that they're doing, is that the human brain actually functions better at an alcohol level. Isn't it something like 0.04 is the number that they cite in the film? And so that's what they're testing. And so this movie isn't really about alcoholism, which is what I thought it was going to be about. And one of the guys falls prey to the drinking a lot harder than his friends. And so I guess you could look at the movie through that lens, but I think it's much more complicated than that. And I also think that Vinterberg, and this is something he's done throughout his career, he's constantly testing your allegiance to these characters, because there are things that they do where, I mean, it's not just bad decisions, it's outright dangerous and illegal decisions that they're making in certain instances. And he's really testing, how far am I willing to follow these characters down this path that cannot have a happy ending? And it doesn't have a happy ending. And yet, without giving anything away, the ending of Another Round, I did not see coming. It comes from out of the blue, even though it sets up, you know, kind of seedlings of how it's going to end throughout the film. I love the ending of this movie. It's this explosion of feeling and movement and music after a very long slog through self-destructive behavior. And it's freeing, but it also feels like kind of an ironic twist on how we expect these kinds of stories to go. So yeah, this movie is going to be challenging for a lot of people. I understand, Dan, that you had a hard time with it, but I think if you're kind of willing to go with Vinterberg here and kind of, you know, let him test you a little bit. I think this is a really terrific movie, and I'm glad to see that it's getting Oscar consideration. I wish that Mads Mikkelsen was in the conversation, because he's just terrific in this movie.
And I think, as far as another round is concerned, I would take a step back and sort of look at the relationship among these four guys who've been friends for a long time. And clearly they provide some sort of support, however off base that might be at different points. But this is the type of experiment that somebody might suggest after people have had a few drinks or ingested a little, some cannabis products or something. And then you would immediately dismiss as, oh yeah, that would be really funny. But so to look at why for each of these four people, this seemed like a viable option, I think is actually the place where we should start examining this, because we do determine that each of their lives have become problematic in different ways. And it also shows, especially with the Mads Mikkelsen character, everybody keeps talking about who he was previously. And that's his wife, his colleagues, his students. And so clearly he's lost something over time, as, and I would argue probably as the result of depression. And depression and excessive amounts of alcohol are not really an ideal mix. So I just wanted them to get thee to a therapist. And because we do see that things have gone awry. And it is the time in your life, I think in your 40s, when you start to re-examine how things could or should or might be different. And so that was needed. But in some respects, I think that the drinking aspect of it is really a MacGuffin in a way, even though, of course, that forms the focal point. And I did appreciate a lot about this film. I like the relationship that they chose to put it in a school setting, because Nathan, as you point out, the dangers of making bad decisions could play out horrifically given the context in which it arises. But it also allows us to have that sort of final ending experience that you alluded to.
I just want to say that the idea that it, when you're talking about another round, the idea that the drinking is the MacGuffin, I wanted to push back on that initially, but you're totally right, because what this movie basically is, do you remember that Joel Schumacher movie Flatliners, where it was all the med students who would deliberately die and then bring themselves back to life? And the further and further they got, the more extreme the experiments became. That's basically what this is. And so you could swap it out with something else and have more or less kind of the same consideration on these themes.
Yeah. And to me, the big irony of Another Round is that, at least at first, each of these guys' lives is made better by their consumption of alcohol. I mean, Tommy, the kids coach, he becomes...
Develops more compassion.
Right, especially for the kid with glasses who everybody picks on. And Peter, the Mads Mikkelsen character, I mean, we've seen him before, and he's a dud in the classroom, and his students are calling him out, and they, you know, dude, we've got exams coming up, and you're not helping us. And then he gets a little alcohol in him, and he becomes a great teacher. There's that one scene in which, you know, he has them elect somebody by his description, and they end up throwing out Churchill and FDR, but they elect Hitler as president, not knowing who they are. I mean, so that is the middle act. And then, of course, there's the third act. And that ending, I'm sorry, Nathan, I just didn't get it. You're right. It's upbeat. It's almost like La La Land, but it's a twisted La La Land. And is it a happy ending? Is it a depressing ending? What is it? I don't know.
I think it's a temporary reprieve, and it's a transition. I mean, so seeing the possibilities of what can happen, and it might have been more effective if it had not been alcohol fueled to some extent, because that, I think, would have satisfied me to a greater extent, that there was this epiphanous experience and people were able to disconnect the notion of joy and freedom and autonomy and camaraderie from alcohol. But maybe that wasn't the point of the story.
Well, now Vinterberg is not going to give you any easy answers.
No. And I think in regards to the ending, I think it's something of a downer ending, but in the guise of a happy ending. And it almost goes too far in portraying the Mads Mikkelsen character as changed or epiphanous or however you want to call it. And I think he's making a statement by using that ending that it does play out like an MGM musical or something. And I think that's just another kind of challenge that he is giving us. Maybe it won't work for some people, but it really worked for me. I mean, I guess make up your own mind. This movie is on Hulu, by the way, so you can watch it at home. I think people should watch it. I think they would be missing out. But it, like you said, it may not be for everyone. And I think it depends on your tolerance for this kind of behavior might be tested quite a bit.
Yeah. Stick around and Nathan will be doing a Budweiser commercial next. Anyway, that was our review of the Thomas Vinterberg film, Another Round. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the Bosnia and Herzegovina Oscar nominee Quo Vadis Ida and to hear Nathan's take on what he's seen at the 2021 virtual version of the South by Southwest Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Public radio connects us as individuals discussing a common issue or piece of music, as communities facing similar challenges with COVID, weather, or civil emergencies, or states and a nation working to face a global pandemic. But public radio has faced severe challenges to our business model. This year, we've relied on extra gifts, emergency funding, and the generosity of others to provide the service you've all come to depend on for fact-based information you can use, news of the region, nation, and world, as well as entertainment and music to lift the spirits. If you depend on us, please understand that we depend on you. We can't provide this service without your help. Please consider Spokane Public Radio for a generous gift today. Call 328-5729 during business hours. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Danish film Another Round. Let's now move to Quo Vadis Ida and Nathan's rundown of the 2021 virtual South by Southwest Film Festival. Let's begin with a trek to Bosnia and Herzegovina. Quo Vadis, and yes, I had to look this up, is Latin for basically, where are you going? And that's the question that writer-director Jasmila Zvanic asks in her film Quo Vadis Ida. Played by the Serbian actress Jasna Juricic, the Ida of the film's title is a translator for the United Nations. The year is 1995, and Ida is attached to the contingent of the blue-helmeted UN Dutch soldiers tasked to protect the citizens of the Bosnia and Herzegovina town of Srebrenica. Based on real events in which, history tells us, more than 8,000 of the town's boys and men were murdered, Zvanic's film is a study of Ida's desperate struggle to protect her husband and two sons. The result is an intense, stomach-churning depiction of the kind of situation that was all too common in the 20th century, and one that is well worthy of its Oscar nomination for Best International Feature.
It's not as though we have not seen this type of film focused on genocidal events previously. As a matter of fact, Dan, one of your favorite film genres, Kosovar films, repeatedly look at this. We have also seen it certainly in the context of UN peacekeepers in a series of fictional and non-fictional films having to do with the genocide in Rwanda. But the difference here is the fact that we are sort of thrust into the midst of what's going on without a lot of context. So the filmmaker relies on us to sort of catch up as to what's happening in this area during this conflict war in Bosnia Herzegovina. And I liked that about it because at first we're not really entirely sure what will be the role of Ida in, you know, this whole process, because we discover early on that she is performing translation functions. We discover that she has been a teacher in the past, and everyone seems to be relying on her for different purposes. And She has been cordoned off in this UN compound along with several of the other people from the village. But there is a literal soccer field filled of people outside who are clamoring to get into the protection of this compound, including her husband and son. One of the sons happens to get into the compound more quickly. And so we see her trying to fulfill her professional obligations, knowing perhaps that her heightened status as a translator could benefit her family, but she's trying to strategize, you know, and be mindful of her obligations to the UN, her obligations to the townspeople with whom her kids grew up. But most important, her obligations, even more so than to herself, to her family members. And of course, her sons are in their 20s and they're not really interested in listening to mom, but they are ultimately convinced that they need to sort of pursue the path that she wants them to take. So it's really fast paced and fast moving. And there's sort of threats at various points when the Serb commander comes on the scene. We're not sure exactly what he's going to do and what the troops are, how they're going to respond. We don't know if infighting is going to break out among the different people who are being housed in these close quarters. We don't know if there's help going to come from the outside, although we pretty much know that whenever people are waiting for help to come from the outside, that's probably not going to happen, at least not in a timely fashion. So there was really a lot to like about this film, especially the performance of the lead actress. And like I said, I think it does rely on your knowing a little bit about this conflict from 1995. But all in all, I agree, Dan, it was well worth its nomination as one of the best international films of 2020.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Another Round is probably the favorite in that category, but this gives it a run for its money. I mean, it's really a movie about being helpless in the face of calamity. And in this case, the person that is the helpless one sees it coming before a lot of the people that are eventually going to be killed by this see it coming. I mean, it's a lot like Sophie's Choice in that way. It's really about this woman and how she is reacting to the unfair morals of war and the chaos of it. So yeah, I agree with you. It's a really powerful experience.
The only thing I would add is that I can't stress enough that much of Quo Vadis, Ida takes place in what feels like real time, in which Ida's mm-hmm. running back and forth, trying desperately to change what she sees happening. It's an intense movie. At any rate, that was Quo Vadis, Ida. Let's close by listening to Nathan share his experience on attending the virtual version of the 2021 South by Southwest Film Festival.
Yeah, I've never been to South by Southwest proper, so this was my first year, and I think I saw 15 or 16 movies. There were a couple that I started and then kind of, it wasn't working for me, so I went on to something else, which is one of the great benefits of these virtual festivals, is that if you know, sometimes you go to a festival and you wait in line for an hour and you get into the movie and 15 minutes in, you realize, oh, I'm going to hate this, aren't I? But you got to sit and wait it out because you waited so long to get in there. You don't have to do that with festivals like this. So I'll run down some of the stuff that I did like. I didn't see anything that really blew me away that I thought was great. And it was actually a much better year, I thought, for documentaries than it was for narratives. But I'll start with a narrative, the movie that actually won the narrative jury prize at South by this year, which is called The Fallout, directed by Megan Park, who's an actor. And it's about this group of teenagers and how they're affected after a shooting in their school, and how some of them become, anti-violence advocates. Some of them retreat into loneliness and isolation, how others become more gregarious and outgoing. It's a really, really effective film and one that touches on a lot of hot button issues without feeling like it's hectoring us or anything like that. The documentary prize went to a movie called Lily Topples the World, which is this really sweet film about a young woman named Lily Hevish, who has become the premier domino artist in America. And while I didn't realize that domino artist was even a job that one could have, she basically creates those giant elaborate domino setups and then knocks them all down. And that's part of the art, is you go and you experience it all toppling all at once. So if you've ever watched those YouTube videos where, you know, those like Rube Goldberg contraptions do their magic, this movie is filled with those kinds of things. I saw two really good music-based documentaries. Tom Petty, Somewhere You Feel Free, which is about the recording of his Wildflowers album from 1994. Kind of a fan film, but I'm a fan, so I enjoyed it. And then another one called Under the Volcano, which was about a recording studio that George Martin built. He was, of course, the Svengali behind all of the Beatles albums. He built in the Caribbean island nation of Montserrat, or I guess it's more of a village right at the base of an active volcano. And unfortunately, the volcano did erupt in 1995. It took out a lot of the village and Sir Martin's studio. But it's about the years where all of these A-list artists were producing this great music from out of this studio. So that's a good one, too. One more narrative film I'll bring up that was one of my favorites called Swan Song. And it stars Udo Kier. And anytime Udo Kier's in a movie, I got to check it out because you know it's going to be weird. Yeah. And in this case, he is an old, long retired hairdresser and beautician who goes off on a quest to make sure that his friend who just died is going to look real pretty in her coffin. And that's a real sweet movie, actually. And then probably the best documentary I saw was called The Lost Sons, this really twisty kind of page turner of a movie, really similar to something like Three Identical Strangers, where this guy discovers that as a baby, he was kidnapped from a hospital, reunited with his parents 2 years later, and now is starting to question if he was even that baby that got kidnapped from the hospital, and goes on this journey trying to discover, you know, if his DNA matches his parents. So that's a really good one. I'm sure that'll be a hit on Netflix or Hulu.
Right up my alley.
So
keep an eye out for all of those.
Is there any way to see them right now? Can you still access them through the festival?
No, not at the moment. The festival's over. It only ran for a few days. Yeah. So I guess, you know, write these down, put them in your queue somewhere. And I'm sure all of them will get some kind of release. I picked ones that I knew would be available at some point. So just keep an eye out.
Okay. And that was Nathan Weinbinder's impression of the virtual version of the 2021 South by Southwest Film Festival. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan, Mary Pat, and I discussed the Danish film Another Round and the film from Bosnia and Herzegovina, Quo Vadis Aida. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the late, great Ingmar Bergman. No art passes our conscience in the way film does and goes directly to our feelings, deep down into the dark rooms of our souls. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.